coming to the meeting. I know members of parliament are stretched, so it's always a joy to see all of you. The last time we did promise that our meeting will be as brief as possible, but we'll try and do justice to what's before us. Good folks from the department, welcome. The last time we had gone through the bills clause by clause, is there anything that you'd like to share with us or point us to the various drafts? And I see there's something ready for my signature. So as soon as we are done, if you have looked and seen that it's a true reflection of the work that we did last time. So,
thank you, Chairperson, members. The proposed amendments have now been captured and clarified with the state advisors, and these are in the proposed amendments as agreed by the committee. There would now be a new clause inserted that will become Section 14, Capital A in the Act. Clause 4 is rejected, and then we have then made the amendments to Clause 6 to reflect the views of the committee in regard to the number of agents at the voting station, as well as the number of agents in the case where the voting takes place in more than one room or enclosure.
Thank you very much. You seem to be wanting to say something. You may.
Thank you, Chair. I thought maybe we should just read the new provision as is in the BBL.
So, good members, we are reading from the BBL. It's the one left-hand corner, bracket, square bracket, B27B. Dash 2010.
Thank you, Chair. It's on page 4. That will reflect the changes that were made to Clause 6, amending Section 39 of the Principal Act. It will read as follows. Clause 6, Section 39 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by A, the substitution in Subsection 1 for Paragraph A of the following paragraph. Subparagraph A, two agents per voting station, with underlined words, or, comma, if voting at the voting station takes place in more than one room or separately enclosed area, comma, two agents in respect of each area or room. And paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph, subparagraph A, one agent per voting station in the ward, or, comma, underlined words, if voting at the voting station takes place in more than one room or separately enclosed area, comma, one agent in respect of each area or room. This is the amendments that Mr. Hendricks referred to relating to Clause 39. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. The state law advisor seems suitably happy and he's wearing his jacket. Not over the chair.
Okay.
You may, sir.
Chair, just to indicate to honourable members that we have done also the consequential amendment to the bill, as well as the memorandum of objects consequent to the proposed amendment that members have proposed in this house.
Thank you very much, State Law Advisor. Honourable members, if you are satisfied that it's a true reflection of our deliberations and you are happy, then all that remains is for me to read the report of the Portfolio Committee. That's one of the very few responsibilities that the chairperson has. So I'll earn my living today by reading this. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, having considered the subject of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Amendment Bill, referred to it and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill with amendments. Report to be considered. We have considered the report. So thank you. I would like to sign off on this on our behalf. I'll do so. Eddie, it doesn't mean if I've got the cheapest watch in the room, I can't afford a pen. Eddie wants to borrow me his pen. I am a very poor man, but there's a little bit of dignity in my poverty. Thanks, good folks. You know, the last time we met, we also interacted with Mr. Adam. You remember our researcher in terms of this report that's due by tomorrow. And members did contact him. So we're hoping, and we believed, in fact, that he would be here with us. Now, Eddie tells me that the last time he saw Adam, Adam was looking for Eve. Now, that's not good news. Get him out of the Garden of Eden. We are at work here.
We don't have 2 hours.
You sure?
Yeah?
Chairperson, may I be excused?
You may.
Thank you.
I would like to thank the delegation from the department and the state law advisor, and in absentia, the parliamentary law advisor. We thank you for your good work, good folks. See you next time. State law advisor, I'm happy you haven't forgotten your jacket. Good folks, we are privileged enough to have Adam back with the kind permission of Eve. Adam, welcome.
Thank you.
We are in your able hands. If you could kindly walk us through your consolidated report so that we can see with the limited time at our disposal and your disposal, what we have been able to pull together so that we can just have an in-principle agreement with the honorable members of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. Apologies for coming a little late.
It's afternoon, Adam.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. yeah, just briefly to tell you how this one is different from the one I gave you yesterday. I still had to do an analysis of the impacts of the MDGs for the department. So that is in the last section, section 7. There's on page from page 21. It specifies how the MDGs, the eight Millennium Development Goals, and how they relate to the Department of Home Affairs. But the main things are that Home Affairs monitors the population in the country. So if you want to do proper planning and also proper reporting on how the development goals are increasing or decreasing, then Home Affairs is important. They have to keep reliable statistics. And then secondly, that basically that Home Affairs is the gateway to all other services. If people don't have documents, then they can't access healthcare, education, any of those things. And that has a major impact on the MDGs if they're not monitored. Okay, so in addition to that, I've done a more detailed analysis of the Section 32 reports, because we couldn't get the SCOPA reports. They haven't done one this year, or they haven't tabled a SCOPA report, which is basically an analysis of the Auditor General's report in the annual report. So I've done a more detailed analysis of the Section 32, which is from page 7. Additionally, the Honourable Nasela was kind enough to send me some recommendations that he'd extracted from this report and also from our oversight, which I've also included, some of which weren't mentioned in here. And then what I've done is I've put them all in the committee's observation section, which is from page 22. So basically, this is just a list of the main issues that the members have raised, and also that has come up through these various forms of information that we've analysed over the year. So it's basically at this stage, it's just in a list. And I need guidance from the members as to which ones they think are important and which ones deserve less or more money. So what I'm recommending is that we go through, there's about three pages of list of these things. And we just need to say which ones are important, and the ones that we think are important we can include in the recommendations. I was hesitant to say, you know, this is what we recommend, because I still need the members' guidance on that. So just
in regard to that, the important thing would be to work towards priorities,
yeah.
The main priorities.
Yeah.
But that would also not mean eliminating the others. They can be there so that whoever reads this can see that, the main priorities, but yeah, other areas that were identified in the course of our work. So it's best to retain that comprehensive list,
mm-hmm.
but seek more or less to have order of priorities.
I think bearing that in mind, one thing that if you look at the conclusion, something that's happened is the way that government reports on its performance has changed. In the previous years, it was according to strategic goals, and now they've moved towards more outcomes-based evaluation. So the department has gone from 6 strategic goals, this is in the conclusion on page 25, they've gone from 6 goals with 93 performance indicators in the 2009-10 year, which is the one that we just got the annual report for, to only 3 outputs, 3 main outputs, and only 47 performance indicators. So there's a drastic reduction in performance indicators. So perhaps this will be good in terms of easier monitoring, but it might be less detailed. So that's something that's of concern. Also the fact that in that 2009-10 year, of the 96 performance indicators that we saw in the annual report, only 37 of them were met. So about a third of them were met, and then 44 partially met, and 15 not achieved at all. So when they had a comprehensive list, they weren't achieving it. So now they've got a narrowed down list, so perhaps it will mean that they'll monitor and perform better, but also could mean that it's less detailed. So that's something I've included in conclusion, and that's up to your discretion whether we should include that as a conclusion or not. So I'd like to suggest just going through these, and then the members can suggest what they think is the most important out of those. There's about 30 of them. I'd probably say we'd narrow it down to 5 or 6. The observations raised by Ms. Honorable Nastela are the first listed here. After that is those which arose from the annual report and strategic plan. And then lastly, you'll see they're separated by spaces, is raised by the MDGs and the budget vote. So that's a combined list. There is quite a bit of overlap between them, so we can probably narrow it down. Because obviously if we go to number 1 under section 8 on page 22, the department must ensure that its capital asset register management is up to date and conforms with the reporting systems assigned in the PFMA. So that's, I think we'll all agree on that. And something that's reoccurring from previous years. So I think this could well be one of the things that comes on the final list. Page 22? Point 8.1. Number 1 there. And then 2, it says 6.8 Rand, but it's actually 6.8 billion in legal fees, needs to be properly documented. That's a considerable amount, so it's not something that came out of the financial report. And so they need to plan better for this. The uncertainty about the Who Am I Online, outstanding with Kijima, which is going to impact on the monitoring by...
You know, it's good that we've got the list, but I just need to remind us. You have given the background that Home Affairs is an important department in regard to documentation and the rights that will emanate there from. The other thing that we have to bear in mind, if I recall the purpose of this exercise, in the main, we are dealing with a focus on adjusted estimates, finances that are available moving forward for the rest of the term of Parliament. So that should be our focal area that informs us. In terms of the monies have been, a budget has been given, but we want to seek or express an opinion in regard to allocations that take us towards the end of this term. Where would we advise the department to be focusing? This is the purpose of this adjusted estimates. So that we should also just guard against seeking to give a summary of the department's annual reports and what have you. The background information is important, but that focus needs to be clear. Then the other issue that you had mentioned in the beginning of the report or in the last report is that government policy, State of the Nation address, President gave the 5 focal areas. In terms of Home Affairs, our oversight over the department, how are they fulfilling the mandate in terms of the monies allocated to them? Then all the other information that we have here remains relevant, but this focus that I've just outlined will give us an indication as to what are our main priority areas without losing sight of the rest of the information that we have here.
Okay, I think in going forward then, I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm going to go through the ones that have money implications, basically. And then in relation to the State of the Nation address, there were 6 key points that were mentioned in the document on page 13. And I've extracted the recommendations that were in the previous document, which were included as part of the body of the document, and I put them in this committee observations section. So basically saying we know that what the state of the nation is, and these are our recommendations concerning that. Forgive me if there's a little bit of a gap between reading each of them, because I'm going to just read the ones that have many implications. Continuing with point three, the Who Am I Online is going to have monetary implications, because there's budget that they're allocated, which they are not going to be able to use until that legal case is finalized. And in the meantime, they've gotten SARS to start doing this new border management system. So they're allocating funds to them while still having other money reserved. So the speedy finalization of that is imperative, and the how they're going to use the old money and reallocate it to the new service provider is also important. The smart ID cards also embargoed. It had financial implications for this year, because they were allocated money for this, but that performance contract was cancelled. So what they're going to do with that money and what the alternative plans are going to be will have implications. Going to point seven, the live capture of photos to passports and identity documents hasn't been rolled out in all offices, according to the annual report. So they need to follow through with that. They had only planned to roll out, I think, to 2/3 of the offices by the end of this year. But if we wanted security, as recommended by the SONA, is a priority, then we can perhaps say that we can allocate more funds to increasing the live capture of photos and passports for this year to finalize as many offices as possible, or to complete all offices within 2 years as opposed to 3 years.
What about number six?
That's been completed. That was I'm skipping through what you said. I must focus on the ones that cost money. That one they've allocated, and it's already been. It's been completed. This was for the financial year. That they were lagging behind in that, and it took them longer. But it's, they're on track with that one. The outstanding, the Botswana nationals won't have a mandatory.
Before Adam, can you go back to seven?
Mm-hmm.
The live capture of photos to passports. Are we talking about the GPW passport machine, or which one is it?
No. In the offices, they have machines. Before, you had to fill in that ID and a passport form by paper. Mm-hmm. And now you have to submit actual physical photos. Now, when you go in there, they take your photo and they automatically put it in the application. And it's not in all the offices yet. They were planning to roll it out over a longer term, and we can say, in terms of security and the state of the nation address, you can maybe prioritize this project, because it's particularly important for identity theft and security and, you know, MDGs and all those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Just make note of that. Online verification is completed. A suggestion was made that there should be a third-party verification of these documentations by Mr. Honorable Ngasela, that in addition to the internal auditing, there should be a third-party verification. This could cost additional money, but I mean, this is a recommendation. I'm not sure if the other members would concur, because that's going to hopefully by the implementation. Sorry.
I'm not very sure whether this falls under seven IDs and passports and like that. Chairperson, what is the point of, if I'm being relevant, you have to stop me immediately. What is the point of allocating money I'm talking about IDs which are, we say names which are wrongly spelled. You try to change, the ID comes back the same way. You've been robbed of your age. Elderly people can't get their pensions because the surnames are wrongly spelled, the ages are wrongly put. There is one village around Nebu in my area, Skukuni, about 700 houses. 85% of the ID says they were born in France. And then it continues, it doesn't stop. It's not only that, it's almost, now I wonder why does it affect the rural people and blacks in particular? It doesn't improve, it doesn't change. But we see Home Affairs trucks running around the villages. It doesn't change anything. It continues to remain like that. So I wonder, what is the point of keeping money where things remain the same?
Honorable Sok.
I don't know what I'm saying. I'm trying to get
on. No, I heard what you said. I heard what you said. The department does need money to carry out its functions. And where there are instances where the result of that exercise is not to be seen in practice, it becomes our responsibility to investigate as to why that is the position. So I would say that the matter that you raise is a pertinent, relevant matter. Members of this portfolio committee have raised similar matters in terms of other areas in the country. Urban areas, peri-urban areas. So I would just like to say that it's an issue that we are not ignoring. It's an issue that will remain with Home Affairs, that will remain with this portfolio committee. It's part of our core responsibility to follow up such incidents. And then with our provincial visits to collate the relevant information and take those up with the department. And I'm sure that the department would give us a reason. We might not be 100% sure or happy with the reason, but we will engage the department in regard to the area that you speak about. So if you could put it down in writing, and then we can engage the department. But for today, I must say that our primary purpose is to get through this exercise without undermining the pertinent issues that attach to some of the issues that we will raise here. Ms. Lovemore, that's a very good surname. In these days of wars, Lovemore always get the opportunity to speak.
Yes, Chair. I see there's an American company that is marketing clothing called Lovemore Clothing, and it's got big Lovemore. I think I must
they
buy
must
you.
Pay you.
I must buy
they
you
must
a
pay you. Yes, please.
Chair, I just wanted to query the point that Adam was on now, and that third-party verification. It was that recommendation was in fact in the report that was handed to us by Adam on Tuesday. So I presume that he had. It must have come from somewhere, and the cost must have been considered. So I'm just interested in the views on that.
Just for the benefit of the rest of the committee members, so many documents have been reached. Somebody, very succinctly, clear, brief, precise. What do we mean by third-party verification? Let's go. Baba.
thank you, Sebastian. The situation emanates from the fact that when you have the LRBs, the letter registration of birth, you need to have someone who is a witness, and that is a third party, who may come from your village, a neighbor, whoever the person might be. Now that person at times you would find that individuals with good intentions would just grab anyone from the street and say, this person knows me very well. And people, because they are professionals sometimes in doing these things, then you'll find that this person will come and testify, and then the application will then be done. So when you take those, when you verify them, it's easier to follow up when things go wrong in future.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nasser. The issue is also an issue that the portfolio committee has dealt with, where there were instances even in rural areas where certain traditional authorities were abusing their office, where foreigners would come and say that they've got a letter from the chief to say that they were born in the area. In urban areas, we've also had principals of schools or somebody saying that this person stayed in my area. So it's a very difficult situation to deal with. So if there's a way of seeking to do right by a person without papers and also securing that system as far as possible, it's our responsibility to do so.
In response to Ms. Lovemore's question, the third-party verification actually came out of our oversight trip when we were doing the pre-World Cup oversight trip. That's one of the things that came up. And also just the all these false documents. If they're going to implement photo monitoring of photo applications, online photo applications for passports and IDs in all offices, that's going to make it a lot more difficult to forge things, because you actually have to be there and the form has to be filled in, and at the same time they have this fingerprint verification where the person who's the official who's doing it has to scan their thumbs in. That also hasn't been implemented in all offices, the thumb verification or the biometric login, and that's also one of the recommendations that's going to come up. Okay, so I think given what the members have said, I think point 10 then we'll have as one of the things that we want to recommend to do. Okay, so the unqualified auditor opinion for GPW won't really have financial implications. It would just basically mean they need to keep better track of things. The keen, okay, same for 13. Yeah. Okay, now, yeah, sorry. The department should establish clear performance and monitoring unit for the management of entities. This comes out of the fact that there were insufficient internal audits within the entities themselves. So the recommendation was that there be additional assistance provided by the department in this regard. So I'm not sure if that would have financial implications or not, though, and whether it's a priority.
Let me start with Mayor Mawunye. We've heard your voice, then I'll come back to you and Ms. Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. I'm asking this because I noticed that IEC is one of those that there was a suggestion of it being monitored and all that, but I thought it's a Chapter 9 institution. Will it be possible for the department to monitor it?
Yeah, they said that the recommendations need to be in line with the Constitution, so if what you're saying is true, then we can't.
Now, in regard to that, it is correct, it's Chapter 9, but then we should look how we can, in our oversight over the IEC, or Electoral Commission, how better to carry out our responsibility in regard to them directly, not through the department. We do have that. Honorable Member?
Chairperson, it is true that IEC in particular is a Chapter 9 institution. However, the other two are not prescribed as such. It remains the responsibility of the role of the portfolio committee but how we phrase that in terms of allowing a resource unit that would then be carrying that mandate from time to time to assist or to monitor, you know, how these entities deal with issues that are directed at them. Because we only get the report from them, but we don't get the department briefing us from time to time, you know, in advance. It only becomes when these entities come to us. And I think there should be a way of oversight over them. I think you've made that point, that, but we need to phrase it properly, that we do have that oversight role.
I would just like to remind members that we have had interaction with the department, and the department at various times has spoken to the issues pertinent to the IEC, government printing works, and the Film and Publications Board. But we have also had interaction with the agencies themselves. And during those interactions, we have it on record where we said to them, and this also resulted in the portfolio committee's visit to the agencies, that our intention is not to have them come to Cape Town once a year to report, but we should have ongoing interaction with them. So as part of that ongoing oversight throughout the year, they will raise issues, will read issues in the newspapers, and it becomes part of our broader responsibility to stay in touch with them. So we'll be able to monitor that process on a continuous basis rather than an annual basis. So we take that on board. We'll see how we phrase it to cater for all this. Adam, the sun is weak outside, but in Afrikaans they say die son drink water. It's getting late in the day, good folks. I don't mind. I'm very happy to see all your beautiful faces the whole day, but let's move.
Okay, we come back to the IEC and I mean to the GPW and the FEV later, and in terms of they're asking for more money, so we'll get back to that. The Who Am I online, that's already mentioned. That's already done. Smart ID card, we've already mentioned.
Page 23, the first bullet point on page 23.
Yeah.
It refers to the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and in numerous other places in this document, it refers to the World Cup as if it is about to happen.
Yes. Okay.
So that must just be deleted. Thank you.
Thank you. Otherwise, you'll be the laughing stock. Where have we been joining Rob van Zinker?
again, the reason I'm skipping those is because they're retrospective. This was raised by Ms. Lovemore, bullet point 3, assessing the progress made in terms of eliminating the backlog of asylum applications. That was for the annual report, so that's from previous year's outstanding recommendations. So, and there's still a backlog in that regard. So, asylum appeals. There's two things: applications, so there's people who apply for the first time around, and then when they're rejected, they get appeals. So these are both mentioned here. So this one's specifically related to the applications, but I think it might be good to put them together rather as a separate point. I'm just going to put that in here. Basically, the financial implication for that would be that there's additional staff required to, because the backlog is continued, so there's additional staff required at the refugee offices, and I'll make that.
I was just about to say that we mentioned the period correctly, the 2008-2009.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we should seek to say to date.
Yeah.
Beyond that, up to now, has there been improvement? What is the situation?
How have you done that?
Honorable Member Unya, you seem to have the intention. Ma'am Makube, is all right. On your mic, please.
Now I don't know how to put this according to Adam's language, but this is in the report.
No, just give it to us and the good folks will.
The back record conversion project aimed at converting the fingerprint system from manual to electronic version.
This has been completed. This is for the 2005-06. But basically, this was the overspend for a number of years ago on the back record conversion project. So basically, it says they overspent on it many years, and then they didn't classify their spending in the right category, and then they had to move it to the next year's budget, so it's going to be for
two years.
So it's not going to have
Could we kindly verify what's the current state, so that if it's in order, we are able to move forward. If there's anything left, then we are covered there.
The linking of IT systems among the offices of the department, if Adam could maybe
Yeah. This is actually largely related to the Who Am I Online project, so it kind of falls under that. I mean, it's specifically mentioned as a sub-bullet point, but the main thing we'll probably mention is that because we're going to have fewer recommendations, is that the Who Am I Online project, or whatever takes its place, is prioritized. If you'll go to bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The department did not reach all its targets in terms of issuing identity documents and passports. But they set themselves lower targets for 2010-11. So the budget implication for this would be then, rather than setting lower targets so they can achieve them, they should rather improve capacity or improve mechanisms for that. So maybe the recommendation would say to not lower the targets, but rather improve capacity or improve spending in this regard. Okay, this is again the monitoring of the entities, which we mentioned before. Is the department sufficiently cooperating with the departments? Content in xenophobia, that's not a major point.
Yes, I understand Adam saying that this isn't a major point in terms of monetary implications.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to question why you've got human trafficking and counter xenophobia, but you don't have cooperating with other departments with respect to the control of illegal immigrants. Is that elsewhere? I've missed it. Okay.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
These are recommendations coming out of State of the Nation address and budget analysis. As you see, there's a space on page 23. The next set of bullet points. So these actually come from the oversight report as well. One of the major budget implications could be that they're trying to improve the thoroughfare between Batebridge, between Zimbabwe and South Africa. They want to expand the road there. It's been so that's going to have quite a bit of implication. But the difficulty with this is it's actually the Department of Public Works that's responsible for that. So I'm not sure if we can make recommendations in terms of DPW, but we can say that the reason this has been delayed for so long is because it's not within the finances of the department. So there's actually a recommendation for Department of Public Works. I'm not sure if we can make a recommendation on that.
We can mention it, but why do you have transport there? Nowhere does it mention public works.
The reason it's transport here is because it's different. In Zimbabwe, it's the responsibility of the Department of Transport. Over here, it's DPW. So I'm gonna just say that there basically needs to be collaboration between our DPW and their transport. But I'll make that point that it's not clear here. The same applies with the accommodation of officials.
Honourable Makubu.
Thank you, Chair. On the bullet points that we are at right now, I was just going through them and I see that we are making suggestions on what needs to be done to improve at the border post. But then again, it reminds me of another finding that we did when we were at the Maseru border post, where there's a machine, very expensive scanning machine that was bought by the department, and they were not using it. So I don't know how we can put that in, that if they get such machines, they must be used, because there's a purpose why the department spends so much money on it. I don't know how we can put it in.
I think it should be somewhere towards the recommendations, conclusions, expressing the desire that the department efficiently and adequately utilizes resources expended or given to it. That will be all embraces. Honorable Maui?
Chair, if I remember well, that was the SARS machine. I'm not sure how can we handle that one, because it was SARS and not the Department of Health.
Anyway, our formulation that we adequately utilize resources expended to us as the Department of Home Affairs will mean all those things that are relevant to us. So it's not just specifically referring to that scanning machine, even if it belonged to SARS. But if SARS entrusts us with the usage thereof, then we should also adequately use it properly.
I think on that point, that was from the first oversight trip. There was a notice that there were problems, but then there was a follow-up trip after the World Cup, and I mean, just before, there were two oversight trips. And the one just before that actually sorted that out. They had a roster and they were actually using it properly. So that issue was actually resolved.
This could have
financial implications. The fourth bullet point in that set, consider filling the vacancies at Lendela and the refugee reception offices. So that also overlaps with the additional refugee staff. So I'll put that together with the others. So I'm going to group them better so that the same things are together.
Adam,
yeah.
We should be more clear there. Not that the department should consider filling the vacancies. It should fill the vacancies.
Can you help me here? I mean, I haven't been here for a while, so I need your assistance on this. There's obviously an organogram with vacant posts, which need to be filled.
I know that we're going to be considering the Refugees Amendment Bill soon, and then it's going to look at things like the Appeals Authority and Status Determination Committees, etc. It's actually going to require a lot more staff. But the fact is that we have refugees waiting up to 4 years to be processed. 4 years for their the processing of their applications. We have massive backlogs, both of refugee applications and appeal applications. Will merely filling the vacancies address that, or is it required rather that there be a complete review of the mechanisms that are in place, whether it be the organograms or whatever it might be, to deal with refugees and the processing of refugees?
The point that you make has been covered in previous meetings. The need to adequately staff the department and also to look at the processes that they utilize in carrying out their functions. Thus, when we visited the various places, there were centers of excellence where the system worked very well. Where is this place? In Joburg, where there was, for want of a better description, unfortunately, Kalmas, where the official was the thin lady, tall was Crown Mines, very efficient. And we looked at the systems and said that the department should utilize best practice so that there can be greater efficiency. So it did tie in with the points that you are raising. Yes.
One thing about this is that because we haven't officially considered the refugee appeal bill properly yet, I'm not sure whether we should include it, but it will have impact for the next year. But I think what is doing the appeals bill is going to make the process a lot more efficient, and they're going to capacitate, they're going to combine two of the appeals authority, appeals bodies, to one's appeals authority, which in principle should fast track the appeals, which are one of the major backlogs. But the problem with that, in terms of finances and also staff capacity, is that they're going to require a lot more high level lawyers. Like, you basically need a lot of very high qualified legal staff, and the question is whether we actually have the legal capacity within the country. So, and then we don't. So the cost implications are going to be that the Department of Home Affairs is actually responsible for recruiting highly skilled foreigners. It's going to have to make an additional concerted effort to bring more of those legal skills in. So that could be the implication of the bill. Over and above so that the system will actually work. If they change it to make it actually work, they're going to need more high-skilled legal staff. But
I would say that we have made the principal point that's been addressed by the recap of Ms. Lavner. But as we move forward, whatever laws are ratified by Parliament, our responsibility does not end there. We also have to look at the unintended consequences. How can they be better framed, utilized in practice? This is where we come back with amendments in order to seek to make the laws better that we have passed. So in that context, we'd be able to keep our pulse on these issues. Right now, as long as we've made the principal point, but the detail will come back to at the requisite time. Mema Wunye, before we move.
I'm tempted to do some, because we've been struggling with the revenue collection of the department. There's this basic accounting system of the department that is supposed to be used, but there's no proper way of the officials using it. Maybe we need to Adam to maybe use his language that that the staff be capacitated towards the basic accounting system.
No, we have to pressurize them that their practice should not attract negative audits. Simple as that. If you don't want to attract negative audits, you have to ensure that people who are entrusted with monies know how to adequately control and record the monies. Otherwise, the end result, it's not being polite to the minister, being polite to anybody. The Auditor General's office gives you a qualified report. So this is what we don't want. So the department has to ensure that it has proper clean audits.
Okay, then moving on to page 24. Okay, carry on.
Chair, I just wanted to question, first of all, the toilets now are separated at Lindela, eh?
I'm not sure about
they
that.
They are, I was there on Monday.
Okay.
Yeah. The third last bullet point on page 23 says the Department of Home... Yes, sir.
If you could kindly remind the House, when you say the toilets are separated, people are looking at each other.
Yeah.
And you were saying that you were there on Monday.
I'm
sure it refers to male or female, but so that people are not guessing. Just kindly... bring the whole committee on par. We greatly appreciate that.
Chair, we visited the Lindela Repatriation Centre on Monday, and this was specifically looked at by my colleague, because he had been part of the oversight visit that your committee had had undertaken, and it has been addressed. The toilets at Lindela are separate for men and for women. Chair, the third last bullet point on page 23 is, it says the Department of Home Affairs should do public relations on what are refugees. It's something that is necessary in terms of the communication generally. I'm sure every member of this committee is being inundated with questions about Zimbabweans right now. The information being put out by the Department of Home Affairs is inadequate, absolutely inadequate. So I've got no problem with the public relations. It does cost, however, but I'm not quite sure exactly what was meant by that point.
I'm sure Adam has taken that on board. It's just poor sentence construction. The point that you mentioned, any department can have public relations exercises to enhance its image. But there's also advocacy work in terms of ensuring that the broad South African public understands the difference between a political refugee and an economic migrant, and the causes that affect, and what are the United Nations prescripts and requirements for the South African government in terms of economic migrants, in terms of political refugees, so that when people have a better understanding. So it's advocacy with the relevant institutions, non-governmental organizations that are operative in the area, and also just general knowledge to provide the people. So that was the intent. Poorly formulated, but we can address that. Thank you.
I think also, just to be fair, this point, they already have PR, they already have a public relations campaign around refugees and xenophobia and that kind of thing. So I'm just going to say improve on that, because, yeah.
Kan ons gaan, mensen, die sondering was er rapie.
Okay, so an increased number of appeals board members and to decentralize them to all the refugees offices. It's going to take a while, even if we do finish the immigration, I mean the Refugees Act this year, it's going to take a while before the regulations and then the implementation comes in. And in the interim, if they want to address the backlog, they're going to have to appoint at least temporary legal staff to better capacitate the appeals board. So that's what that was that about. Okay, criminal charges, I think, yeah, I don't know if that's financial implications. The docu-track system should be rolled out. I'm still on page 24, I'm on page 24, the top of page 24. Sorry, my point has changed because I've worked on the document. Let me check the original. We're on point one, actually. Point two on page 24. On non-verification, we've already mentioned that. So like I said, there's a little bit of overlap because there's different various reports. So that's going to come out. Electronic security systems in all offices. This is just a concern about the access to the departments. Again, it's going to have a significant financial implications, but whether that's a priority or not is to be decided. Yeah. Okay, the all mobile units should be working properly to service rural areas. The contractor that was providing the mobile unit repair, they had problems fulfilling their mandate and their contract was cancelled. So the mobile units, a lot of them are not functioning. So in terms of expanding the service delivery to remote rural areas, that could be quite important, but they need to appoint a new service provider for that. So this all comes from the oversight report. I'm not sure.
I do think that we need to prioritize the electronic security system and let's at least say in most offices, if not all offices, but we need to prioritize that. And also the issue of mobile units needs to be prioritized. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say not in all offices, maybe perhaps in risk-prone offices or... The live capture of photos we've already got. To issue a naturalization certificate, that's already done. Increase large accounts. Yeah. Increase the large accounts or the naturalization? Okay, improve the servicing. So what was your point again? Improve the servicing and?
It currently just says increase the servicing of large accounts. I certainly have received a lot of complaints that servicing is totally inadequate. So increase and improve.
Permits should be issued within the agreed time frame. Departments are still lacking behind its set targets. This, I think, is not so much a financial question as just a better monitoring, better turnaround time.
Just interestingly on this one, and I'm trying to think which it is, if it's a work permit, it doesn't matter, one of the permits, say a work permit. If you go onto the website, it tells you the turnaround time is 30 days. That's advertised to the public now via the website. Tells you the turnaround time is 30 days. You go into the annual report and tells you the turnaround time is 6 months, and into the strategic plan and it tells you the turnaround time is 18 months. So the department must decide on its turnaround times. So it says permit should be agreed within the agreed time frame. What is the agreed time frame? Is it according to which document? The website, the strategic plan, or the annual report?
I think to be specific, we're going to refer to the latest strategic plan, because I think the target there is 6 weeks for this financial year.
The situation as is that you have the annual report of the previous year, you have the turnaround strategy as of 2007, the turnaround plan that we have, and you also have the department overall strategy. So what happens is that the turnaround plan which we had in 2007, which we're working on last year and the years preceding that, it spoke on the different time frames, but from time to time as the year and service improves, so it then improves on the turnaround time. But the challenge is that it depends at the time that we are, that then the department will then say, because we have seen the improvement, now we are changing. For instance, now, they are working also on weekends. I had a meeting with the regional office in Kailisa where they are saying they were starting as and when the time was agreed to. So without confusing any members, the turnaround times would depend at the time as which the department has agreed to implement the strategy. I think for us what is more important here is that we should check what is the turnaround time that the department is actually operating on now, so that from now on we know that if you go for an ID, it takes 27 days, for instance, if you are going for the second issue. And the first issue, you know, those kind of issues that we should be looking at. Maybe the department can give us the exact time frame at this stage.
Thank you, members. You have stated the situation as
yes.
There has been improvement. SMS is sent to public, what have you. So let's just frame it in terms of the latest and the intention to improve even on the latest turnaround time. That will ensure better service, obviously. Ms. Lovemore.
Yes, and I certainly don't mean to talk contrary to my colleague. I understand fully what he's saying, but I believe very strongly that if the department is using mechanisms such as a website to advertise to the public that uses its services, that it will deliver those services within a time frame, then it is agreeing with the public that it will deliver those services within that time. This says within the agreed time frame. Agreed with who? So the department, we can go to the department now and say, how long is it taking for a work permit? And they say 18 months, and we say, okay, fine, you must stick to 18 months then, because that's what you're doing at the moment. We can't do that. There must be a defining, and I accept what Adam is saying, perhaps the strategic plan, stick to those time frames. But we must have some sort of benchmark that we're holding them to.
Members, we have agreed on this. You have approached the issue, slight different emphasis on one or the other aspect, but there's general agreement. And also within the confines of this room, there's the liaison offices of the minister, officer rather. They'll also flag this point, that what you put out on your website, you should update it very regularly. So it should not say 18 months, whereas you can provide that service, I'm just speaking off the top of my head, in 3 weeks. Then it makes the department look bad when you still speak of 8 months and you can do it in a much shorter period. So what we are also saying is, let's update the information that we put out. So all the points that you have mentioned, good folks, are taken on board.
Yeah, okay. To confirm, the latest was 2009-10 strategic plan said they were aiming to achieve it within 4 weeks, and they only achieved 6 to 8 weeks. But the latest statistics available say they're doing it in 6 weeks, so they're getting closer to their target. So I'm going to verify what it says in the latest strategic plan and include that as part of what I'm going to say here.
Thank you.
Formulating a policy on the separation of economic migrants from genuine asylum seekers. So this is already happening in terms of the finalization of the refugees bill, the immigration amendment bill, and also this moratorium. So that's not going to be future. It's a question of implementing, not formulating.
Ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out that bullet point that you're reading now. Is it not related to the last bullet point on page 24? Because I'm thinking maybe it's the same. Maybe it could be
But the policy in PR is different. PR is like popularizing it, informing people what's happening. Whereas the policy is, actually what they need is a unifying policy that addresses both immigration and asylum seekers in a broad policy, as opposed to just individual pieces of legislation. But that's not on the cards at the moment. Like a migration policy for the country, there is no such thing on the cards. But both the refugees and the immigration amendment bill are being finalized. So it's going to be improving on that. But what's stated here is that the policy needs to be formulated. So it's still open to debate as to whether we need a national, to initiate a process for a national unified policy which combines all these things, economic, refugee, immigration, all those things. So that's up to the discretion of the members.
Page 40 something in the annual report, it talks about targets not having been met with respect to refugees. I'm trying to think what the target was with respect to immigration, and it gives as a variance, as the reason for the variance, the fact that a comprehensive immigration policy review is to be undertaken. So in fact they have made a commitment to that. I would imagine that that would be included. So the policy is, as I read it, in the annual report.
The thing is, this is retrospective. I mean, because this annual report speaks about what happened in the previous year and what needs to be done, there's been almost 6 to 7 months since this came out. And in that time they've finalized both the immigration and the refugees, which we're still going to process. And only once those are finalized it should actually be that there's the unified policy first, and then the bills follow from that. But that's been ongoing for 10 years, and nobody could agree on it, and it's a very complicated process. So I'm not entirely sure if we want to get that ball rolling again in terms of generating a migration policy for the country. It is important. I mean, we can initiate the debate, but it's a bit difficult now that both the refugees bill and the immigration bill have already been finalized, and you're making a policy after the fact.
Now, let's move forward. The point has been made.
A point coming out from the annual report was that the department's excellence centers should be completed, and more should be established. The latest verification I have is that out of the four that they were promised, three have been completed, one is still to be completed. And the recommendation from that from the annual report meeting, I forget which member, but was that that four wasn't enough, that there should be more. So that also would, because I mean each of these offices is going to cost a couple of million to either refurbish or establish. So I'm not sure if that's something we want to include. 58% of the internal audits have been conducted. This was due to there being a lack of internal auditors, or one of the internal auditors being or resigning or being reallocated or something like that. That's not a major financial implication. The big thing though, there's irregular spending of 321 million rand for the tender process. It's now the members are all very well aware that the department had serious problems with the issuing of tenders with all these IT projects that are going wrong. So there is a need. I mean, exactly how it is to be done is another question, but they basically need like a very strong tender component with incapacitation and training and planning in terms of tenders. All going to have financial implications in terms of going forward and fast tracking these outstanding projects. So I think that would be one of the major ones that we'd include. It's tender planning, training, and compliance. Okay, then there's underspending. This is looking at the latest financial information. Is that there's underspending due to a number of factors. So basically, what it means is that they need better financial, either more recruiting of more financial staff or implementing of. Basically, it's what Ms. Monia said about better training on the basic finance, basic. Accounting processes, because they're paying things late, or and it's resulting in an underspending. So I'm not going to mention that point. I'll relate it to what Ms. Manning said before. This is also relating to what I said about there not being sufficient information. This is the next point. It is recommended the National Treasury provides the committee with more in-depth analysis, and this also relates to the department giving the National Treasury more accurate information, because they've reduced the amount of targets or performance indicators. We might require more information than what is provided in their annual reports or even their Section 32 reports. So this is going to. I think it's just more concerted effort from the department as opposed to any financial implications. So I'm not going to put that one in. I think unless we disagree. Then the next point is just what their expenditure. They're supposed to have already achieved 50% expenditure by this time of the year, and they've only got 30%. So again, it's just a question of underspending. The turnaround program, Fevertree and the AT Kearney, were still being owed 63 million by the end of June 2010. That's the latest information that I have. As to whether they've settled with them or not, I'm not sure, but that means money they're going to need if they haven't paid it. So that's a recommendation that will come in. That we've already mentioned the separating of economic and refugees. Further challenges. The next point, which is on the next page, it is a further challenge that is from page 25, the first point. A further challenge is that there's streamlining of the permitting system, which you've already mentioned in terms of achieving targets. But it also needs to be more flexible and proactive, because what happens is, once things become regulations after the Act is implemented, then things become very fixed, and there's no discretion allowed, obviously, to prevent fraud. But they're encouraging flexibility so that we don't let highly skilled people that don't 100% qualify, whatever, that we can prioritize skills acquisition over like the very specific following of regulations. So it's basically just. It means better management, so that the managers know what their discretion is in terms of giving people permits. So another thing that hasn't been done is the updating of a quota system. Basically, they reissue the same quota system every year. So they have the same set of short skills, and they're not doing enough work on piloting or like adapting it to the specific new needs. Like we might need more doctors this year, or more IT people, whatever the case is, and the quota that's already severe are too stagnant. It's just for my own personal observation. Okay. Okay, this is relating to the MDGs in general, and it basically it's just saying they need to keep to better statistics, which is again dependent on better systems integration, which is dependent on the UMI online. So, yeah, so there's no direct implication financially, but rather as a result of the improvement of other processes. So, okay, so that's the end of the list of recommendations. Should I just quickly go through the ones that I've highlighted that the members said are important, or should we take it that we know which ones were important, and I'll just extract those.
Comment members.
Honourable members.
Thank you, sir. And I think we have spent fair amount of time on this, so I think what Adam could do as per the committee is that he puts together this and this to be a recommendation from the committee. Then I'm sure the document will be forwarded to us in the manner in which Parliament prefers.
Do we have agreement there? May No, I saw a hand first.
Thank you, Chair. I fully agree with the Honourable Minister.
Thank you. May Maunya, you would like to say something?
Yes, Chair. I was saying we said nothing about corruption. Should we say anything maybe about it?
We can say so. We must fight it and root it out wherever it shows its ugly face.
In terms of how to do that in terms of finances, I mean, they've got a new counter-corruption unit. We haven't really seen what their results are yet, because they haven't reported on yet. So there's no real... I'm doing another brief for the Chair of Chairs, which is on corruption, and I'm awaiting information from the department. So if I get it, then I'll include it. But we don't know whether they're doing well or not yet. But it's an ongoing concern. I don't know how to translate into specific. Do they need more or less money? So that's difficult to say.
So,
Ms. Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. And I really appreciate that being brought up, because it obviously is so important. I just want to note, and I'm not sure which page it's page 15. It talks about, in the middle of page 15, it talks about the integrity management unit, the chief director's integrity management unit. Is that not outdated? That has been upgraded to a branch with the DDG for counter-corruption and security being appointed, so that must just be changed. But yes, I mean, they need to look at, certainly, they must investigate counter-corruption measures, and it might be, for instance, things like CCTV cameras, or not handling cash at offices and insisting on bank deposits. The details are up to them, not me. But I agree 100% that we should put something in about the investigation of counter corruption measures and implementation.
So we have agreed we'll just clean up the report and prioritize what we have. If there's nothing further, then, good folks, this is the end of our meeting. Adam?
Just in terms of the formal procedures,